Ms. Goldblum.
Good morning, counsel. My name is Marcy Goldblum on behalf of the plaintiff, Coy Thomas. Mr. Thomas is a Vietnam War veteran. He was awarded a Purple Heart. He was later awarded 100% service-connected disability from the Veterans Administration because his chronic lymphocytic leukemia was then put on the Agent Orange list. He filed his application for disability benefits on January 9, 2004, and he originally alleged disability as of March 15, 2002. At the hearing, however, the date of disability onset was amended to November 1, 2002, and you can find that at page 840 in the record. In this case, Mr. Thomas has date last insured of December 31, 2002. So the basic question is, what do we have before his insured status expired? And it's our contention that this gentleman was entitled to more than what the ALJ accorded him in this case. And the bottom line is that he was found to have the chronic lymphocytic leukemia in early 2002. And thankfully, particularly for the first part of 2002, he wasn't particularly symptomatic. It wasn't until later in 2002 that he started to have more increased symptoms. And at the hearing, he testifies about the fatigue getting worse in the last quarter of 2002, which I believe is why the date of onset was amended to November 1st, 2002. And it's interesting that he had originally been treated at the Carley Clinic, but then switched to the VA. He gets one appointment in September. Then there's supposed to be an appointment scheduled for December 17th of 2002. And we can find that, I believe, at page 134 of the record. There's supposed to be a hematology appointment at noon that day, but then the clinic reschedules it to January 28, 2003. Then in January 28, 2003, they find that he's got swollen lymph nodes, his neck, under his armpit, and his testimony at the hearing was that, you know, at the end of 2002, I was having bad fatigue. I was sleeping on the couch because I couldn't even, the idea of making it up the steps to the bedroom was just too much. The ALJ finds that there's no severe impairment prior to December 31st, 2002. And what we have a real problem with is how did the ALJ make that judgment call that the signs and findings from early 2003 didn't relate back to December of 2002 without calling upon a medical expert? The government argues that he didn't have to call upon a medical expert for a couple of reasons. They say that, number one, Social Security ruling 8320 doesn't apply because the ALJ never found that this gentleman was disabled.
By the way, forgive me for interrupting, but
sure.
Ms. Goldblum, is the ALJ required to make a 8320 finding, or is it advisory?
Well, you know, I think in this case, there are some decisions from this court that seem to indicate that he actually doesn't have to. On the other hand, there's also a HALEX, which the ALJ does have to follow, and that's HALEX 1-2-5-34. And that says a medical expert is needed when the ALJ needs advice as to the etiology or course of a disease and how it may affect the claimant's ability to engage in work activities at pertinent points in time. And that's this case absolutely, because we have a complex case. I'm a lawyer. I can't tell you what the etiology of chronic lymphocytic leukemia is in terms of, you know, is it absolutely the case that in late December of 2002 it was reasonable for the symptoms that he complained of? I think it's likely, but I think that the ALJ needed to call upon a medical expert who could have said, look, I'm looking at the things that we have in the record. For instance, in April of 2003, early April, the clinic, the notes from the VA, and this is on page 638 of the record, they talk about increased fatigue. Now, I'm not trying to be overly semantic, but if there's increased fatigue, it means that there had been some fatigue prior to that time. And these are things that I don't think had gone into the ALJ's equation, but more importantly, the ALJ doesn't have the medical expertise to say, you know what, we've got this medically determinable impairment, which is chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And I don't think any of us doubt that that in itself is a severe impairment. But what the ALJ was saying is, okay, this disease didn't necessarily have any limitations that would have kept him from doing anything in the job range, which is what we're focused on. But there are some things that were missing from the ALJ's assessment. He says, and what's also problematic is the ALJ never really made a full credibility determination. Now, the district court says we can infer what the ALJ was thinking in terms of credibility, but Social Security ruling 96-7P says you can't do that, that the credibility finding from the ALJ must be explicit. And there really wasn't an explicit one here. And I think that that was also really a key error here because, again, we have this gentleman who is testifying that the end of 2002, my fatigue got really bad. And the ALJ does make reference to some of the activities he was doing in the early part of 2002, but in a way, that doesn't really tell us anything about what was happening in the last quarter of 2002, which is really where the focus ought to be. You know, what was going on in early 2003, and does that relate back to late 2002? And a proper analysis of that was not done here. And again, the ALJ doesn't make reference to the fact that there was supposed to have been the appointment apparently that was scheduled for January, that he had on January 28th of 2003, was originally supposed to have been held December 17th, 2002. And it seems, I mean, sometimes the word unfair isn't necessarily the word one wants to bandy about in a courtroom, but here we've got this decorated veteran, and it's almost like, well, you know what, if the VA hadn't changed your appointment and we would have had the same notes in December of 2002 that came up in January 2003, well, we might have been looking at this a little bit differently. That doesn't seem right, and under the guidelines of 8320, even if it's not formally applied, they tell us that the later medical evidence can be related back. That's something that a medical expert needs to do. And in terms of the state agency reviewers, it doesn't appear from what they've written on their forms that they really reviewed the later evidence to see if it related back. I see I'm into my rebuttal time. And if there are no further questions, I will see you back on rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Studzinski.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Ed Studzinski, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this matter.
Could I just start you right out, Mr. Studzinski?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Thanks. Because there are no medical records between June 2002 and December 2002, when Mr. Thomas's eligibility expired, how do we know that his symptoms did not worsen in those 5 months? What evidence is there that would contradict Thomas's testimony that they did?
Well, Your Honor, the most obvious evidence is Dr. Rojas' uncontradicted opinion that based on his review of the record, which at the time he reviewed the record did include what were later tabulated as Exhibits 1F and 2F, uh-huh. Those were basically his findings, his medical treatment throughout 2002, during which he consistently denied any symptoms and consistently described considerable activities. His treating oncologist consistently described his condition as being at stage zero, the lowest of five stages. That was before Dr. Roja, as it was before the state agency physician who reviewed it on initial review. Also before them were Exhibit 2F, which were the Veterans Administration records from 2003, which are when he did initially, for the first time, the first mention of any fatigue was in April 2003. So it is conceivable, Your Honor, a fact finder could determine that these that fatigue actually set in sometime in this gap. There is at least a gap from September 02 until January 03. And so now plaintiff amends his onset date to November 2002. There's no indication of anything that occurred in November 2002. There's no change at that time. There is some reference to a December appointment that got rescheduled, but there's no indication that he contacted any doctor at that time. There's no indication that he changed his activities at any time. This individual had retired about 5 years earlier. Plaintiff, opposing counsel, attempts to portray her claimant as a sympathetic, decorated veteran who is disadvantaged by a technicality, an unfair technicality. Opposing counsel makes no mention, however, of the fact that as an applicant for Social Security disability benefits, her client bears the burden of proving that he was disabled within the requirements of that regulatory framework. And there it is undisputed that plaintiff is responsible for providing evidence that they were disabled during the relevant period, that is, while they remained insured for disability insurance benefits purposes. Plaintiff provided no such evidence. Later, he claimed to say, well, actually, I was getting a lot worse during this period, where there's silence in the record. The ALJ expressly addressed this. Opposing counsel maintains that she's unable to see where the ALJ assessed Mr. Thomas's credibility. The ALJ expressly found, and I quote, examination of the longitudinal record indicates that the claimant's memory is understandably inaccurate given the length of time involved and the length of his progressive illness. As to the progression of his disease, and thus the longitudinal medical record will be given prevailing consideration. That's at transcript 13. The ALJ clearly considered this individual's hearing testimony and found that not to be the most reliable evidence. With respect to the other factors that are generally considered in assessing an individual's credibility, there simply was no contemporaneous evidence as to those. As I indicated, there's no indication that this individual limited his activities in any way. To the contrary, the only mention in the medical record is that he was engaging in activities such as turkey hunting and chopping and sawing wood to sell. Again, he subsequently tried to testify that he did those on a very limited basis. It was absolutely acceptable within the ALJ's realm of choice to afford greater reliability, to rely more greatly on the contemporaneous statements rather than plaintiff's subsequent testimony at his hearing. There's zero evidence of any treatment. His treating oncologist said, no treatment necessary, we're simply going to observe him. Zero medications. So all these traditional factors that you would see in the regulations under 1529 simply do not exist. Opposing plaintiff, who bore the burden of proving that they were disabled, simply did not satisfy that burden. Did that respond to your question, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. It simply is incorrect for opposing counsel to suggest that there was no medical expert's opinion on this matter. Dr. Roja was an expert. Dr. Roja was expressly asked to assess the condition during the relevant period. His unambiguous opinion was entirely consistent with the ALJ's decision. And again, when I say Dr. Rojas is an expert, I don't mean he's an oncologist, but he is an expert in assessing claims for disability, Social Security disability benefits. In plaintiff's brief, plaintiff generally averred substantial amounts of evidence detailing the period prior to December 2002 were added to the record after this opinion. That's in the reply brief at 6. Plaintiff didn't cite to the record in their brief or at oral argument. This subsequent evidence doesn't exist. They submitted a lot of evidence. This individual did receive treatment, chemotherapy, for his leukemia. None of that evidence dates back to the period prior to December 2002, December 31st. Not one doctor who treated plaintiff after, in 2003 and afterwards, expressed any opinion that he was limited in any respect prior to December 31st. With respect to 8320, opposing counsel wishes not to be overly semantic. That was with respect to the increased fatigue. That's opposing counsel's interpretation of the one word. The first mention of fatigue was that this 55-year-old individual mentioned increasing fatigue. It is conceivable that a fact finder could interpret it semantically in the manner that opposing counsel offers. It was not mandatory. The ALJ was not required to do so. That certainly does not constitute reversible error. But with respect to 8320, Your Honor, Judge Rovner, you asked if the ALJ was required to make such a finding. Absolutely not, Your Honor. Agency policy set forth in 8320 and in this court's case law, such as Scheck, Eichstack, Estock, all cited in our brief, clearly states that if there is no date of onset required in cases where there is no finding of disability. In this case, the only period the ALJ needed to determine was that up until December 31st, 2002. The ALJ was not required to issue an advisory opinion as to whether or not this individual became disabled at some later point, whether or not he was limited to any extent at some later point, whether that lasted for 12 continuous months. Those were irrelevant as long as there was a finding that he was not disabled as of 12/02. And the uncontradicted contemporaneous evidence fully supports the ALJ's decision. Plaintiff attempts to distinguish these cases on their factual basis, but they make no attempt to distinguish the unambiguous underlying legal principle, which is that no date of onset is required if an individual was never found disabled. With respect to the Hallux plaintiff cited, medical advisor is needed if the ALJ requires input to develop the record. In this case, the ALJ had an expert opinion before him. The ALJ, as the fact finder, was responsible for determining whether or not the record was adequately developed. In this case, it was. And, Your Honor, I urge this court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Goldblum?
Yes. To begin with, I'd like to make it clear that Mr. Thomas didn't attempt to testify. He did, in fact, testify. He testified that in the last quarter of 2002, his fatigue got worse. And as far as Dr. Rojas is concerned, again, he did offer an opinion, but his opinion is not clear at all in terms of whether he viewed the later evidence in terms of it being able to relate back. And regarding the credibility, the district court found, the district court says, the court agrees that the ALJ could have been more explicit in making his credibility findings, and says the court, however, can track the ALJ's analysis. Under Social Security ruling 96-7P, that's not adequate. It has to be an explicit finding. And just saying that he thinks that his memory may not be great, that's not an explicit credibility finding. These are supposed to be non-adversarial proceedings, and although government counsel tries to indicate that a medical expert was not needed under the Hallecks in this case. Again, the bottom line is the ALJ made the judgment call that these signs and findings from early 2003 didn't relate back to December of 2002. There was no adequate basis for him to have done that without the assistance of a medical expert. We ask that you remand for that purpose. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.